Welcome to Decoding Careers, a podcast to help software engineers transition into a leadership role.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Decoding Careers. So we've got a special episode for today's show. Really excited about this one. We even had one of the tech leads, he flew from Melbourne, wanted to get out of there because he prefers Sydney, as we all probably agree with. But in all honesty, it's my absolute pleasure to introduce the two guests on the show. So I'm with Vikas, who's the tech lead at Coles, and also Anton, the senior sort of engineering manager across platform. Now, these two have, Vikas in particular has volunteered to introduce himself. So I'm going to hand the mic over to you guys, and maybe you can sort of give the audience a bit of an intro.
Hello, everyone. My name is Vikas Kaushik. I'm a tech lead in platform engineering team in Coles Digital. The digital is the Coles digital part of the company. Got a team of roughly five people who handles things like infrastructure as a code and stuff like that. I come from a sysadmin background, have roughly a decade and a half years of experience in different industries like banking, telecom, and now retail lately. And other than work, I like to play cricket. I play cricket on the weekends. Got a bit of gymming. I like fitness, and I do cooking. I'm an amateur cook. I like to cook. It's good meditation for me. Yeah, that's me. And over to Anton.
Thanks, Sam. Really excited to be here today. My name is Anton Vishnikov, and I am a senior engineer manager for so-called platform engineering at Coles Digital. And I guess the best way to think about Coles Digital is coles.com.au website. So that's us, and also two awesome mobile apps for mobile, the iOS and Android devices. That's also us. I lead 22 engineers across three different squads. As Vika said, we're looking after everything to grab your application and move application into cloud or on-premise environment. Unlike Vika's, my background is a software engineering. I started my career from software engineering, went through consulting, infrastructure, all the different bits and bats, and recently started looking into cloud, into all the DevOps things. And outside of work, I'm really passionate about rock climbing, been really invested into indoor rock climbing. Staying fit helps me to stay fit. And
nice.
Over to Happy Sam. To be here.
Yeah, nice. Brilliant. Well, thanks for that intro, fellas. And I've heard Anton's got quite a rigorous rock climbing exercise regime, apparently, which is meant to break you if you was to give it a go. So, look, really appreciate the intros there, fellas. And it's great to get you here. Now, I think what would be good to sort of understand is what's brought you here today?
The whole point of this conversation is to share our experiences of how to get into like leadership. What are the challenges that a leader goes through? What are the skills that are required? And how do you essentially, you know, go on from a software engineer to a leadership role? What are the hurdles? What are the challenges that you need to face? Probably we'll share our journey, how we did it. Maybe it'll be helpful for people who are listening.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. And sort of Anton, are you sort of on the same sort of path there, or have you got anything else to add?
Oh, spot on. I think transition from being an engineer and moving along the career ladder and becoming a little bit more force multiplier, bringing others into the journey and becoming this technology leader, or maybe a people leader, it's very difficult to quantify. And there's no right or way wrong here, very contextual, and there are a lot of challenges. And yeah, I'm really excited to be here today and share my personal experience, maybe good things and also fails, of course, and share back and contribute back to community.
Perfect. Brilliant. All right, so let's start from the beginning then. It's how we always start the show. Lucas, maybe take us back to when you wrote your first line of code.
It was back in 2007 when I started my career. So I was fortunate straight after uni, I got a job in a multinational. It was back in India. Got this job, started writing basic shell scripts just to get information from multiple Unix servers or connect to them. Because I come from a sysadmin background, not essentially like a software engineering background. But as a part of sysadmin, you have to do a lot of health checks, take a couple of information from all the Unix or Solaris servers. So yeah, I wrote a couple of shell scripts just to get those health checks, present it to management, that sort of stuff, because it was old school way of doing it. It was not conventional, like these modern engineering tools that we have. It was more conventional 15 years ago. So yeah, I wrote a couple of shell scripts back in 2007-8.
Yeah, nice. Anson?
My first line, I guess, was at uni. It was a course about application development. It was a Samba back in the day, 2003. And then the first commercial kind of piece of code I ever written, it was PHP. It sounds weird, probably, but back in the day, it was a kind of a big thing, given my context.
Yeah. No, interesting. And what was the reason, sort of, why you got into engineering? Was it always a passion from a young age? Was it from the background of the family, or...
Yeah, to be fair, there was a boom coming in India at the time I was growing up and doing my university, and a couple of my cousins were already into this industry. This IT industry was booming in like late 2000s in India, where I started my career from. And I did, in our university, people, like companies came for like hire people, and I got hired straight away from uni. So I landed up my first job from college directly. So I was being fortunate back then.
Yeah. Okay. No, that is pretty fortunate. Anton?
To be honest, I've got a degree in fundamental physics, and I always wanted to be in science, like a really fundamental science. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then at some point, I had that course for software engineering, and I really wanted to switch my gears and become a game developer. Didn't work out for me, and I moved into web development because it just was big back in the day where I was. And then I didn't really like to deal with all those UI and the buttons and the pages and all that kind of stuff. And I went into backend engineering, and I found a peace of mind. And to be honest, it just happened, yeah. And I started liking organically, and ever since I never looked back. I really enjoyed what I've been doing over years.
Yeah, nice, brilliant. And let's sort of talk about in terms of university. It's always good to get different perspectives. I speak to a lot of software engineers that are sort of at the early stages of their career, and they're wondering whether they need to go to university. Is it going to give them a better chance to get a role? Just from a high level, what sort of your opinion across that?
Oh, my personal experience, like I studied electronics and communication, which has nothing to do with softwares and IT. But I think uni gives you some sort of a life solving problems in your life as well. It gives you learnings in a sense. At least in engineering, you learn a lot of life lessons as well, which helps you in taking up your career. But yeah, in these days, technologies and trainings are so available very easily that you actually, even if you don't go to uni, it doesn't matter. Yeah. To be honest,
okay.
You can pick up a skill. 10-year-old running companies with no uni experience, and they still make money, proves that you can still get into coding and stuff like that without going to uni. But yeah, if you really want to go into a specific course or something, still uni makes sense.
Yeah, no, interesting. And Tom?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Vikas. I think any university or any degree gives you a fundamental skill set which goes beyond like today or even tomorrow. It's a life kind of life-spanning skill set, like a soft skills, presentation, organizing, bunch of people together, and bringing everyone on a journey. But then I think nowadays it's a lot of universities have partnerships with the big banks, big names like Canva, Atlassian, tech startups, anything of that sort. You can basically have a really fast lane out of university to get into any industry, whether that's, again, banking or trendy startup or a big organization with a big name. So definitely, definitely, it's much more better than I think it used to be, and it's only improving.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, getting into sort of the meaty part of the show, what do you think makes a good leader?
It's hard to quantify in like bullet points, but yeah, I think a leader should lead and, you know, act, lead by example, like the practices and whatever that he preaches. First, he should follow and set an example for the team. Like, these are the basics things that you have to do. Learn from me, or like at least observe how someone behaves. And a leader is not quantifiable by age as well these days. A young guy coming from uni could be a natural leader, like just like in sports or anything else. A young guy can be a leader as well. It's all personality traits as well, like how a person behaves. Is he a good team player? So I think a good leader should be a good team player as well, giving opportunities to the team members and appreciating them on time, like so that they feel appreciated. Also, yeah, lead by example. That's a primary key. And good with soft skills, and should be good with people as well. That's the basic traits.
Nice. Anton?
Definitely agree with Vikas, and I want to emphasize on the lead by example in this software engineering context in the IT industry. I think lead by example is a very much overlooked area and a skill set as well, because basically you're working with other engineers and they're very, very smart people, right? And so when you don't know what you're talking about, it just might not work out, yeah? You may be lucky in some situations, but generally it's not going to scale. Yeah, other people are very smart as well. So, yeah, I definitely see two big buckets. One is the ways of working, because already covered that. Basically, all about communications, all about bringing others into the journey and growing, learning together. Yeah, that's a key to become a leader, right? And then the second one is the skill set, which I'm really passionate about that one, and I explain why, because you work with very smart people, right? And unless you have a skill set, something to add, that may not work out. Last one I probably add is that specifically in engineering area, you need to have a good overview. When you're becoming a leader, you need to have a good overview. So it's not about you anymore, right? You work as a force multiplier. So you're stepping up from engineering area and you look after the team. That's the value you add. This is why it's important to bring others into the journey. Your value is to move team forward, not like yourself as an individual, right? But then as far as you're progressing, it's becoming all about moving multiple teams, right? Moving them forward, right? Unblocking them, right? And maybe at some point it's your game gonna go up, and you're going to be moving the whole organizations, right? So you need to realize where you are and what you're passionate about, whether you're moving yourself as an individual contributor, as an engineer, right? Or you're passionate about mentoring other engineers, right? As a leader, right? Informal leader. Or you're stepping up into maybe tech lead and you're moving the whole team, right? Maybe principal engineers, where you're moving a couple of teams or business vertical. And then at some point, yeah, you're going to move multiple teams or the whole organization forward. Just have a step back and think about those things.
Yeah, okay. And how do you know what route to go down?
A good leader should have a clear vision or path that we are aiming for. And that vision or path that he has set, he need to, you know, kind of dumb it down for the team as well, because teams or people in general, software engineers, would be working in their own silos and in their own cocoon and working in like, I know this code, like I'm just going to work on this one. But a good leader should have a clear vision, this path we are going to go, and take everyone on the journey and make them part of the journey as well. Because sometimes what happens is what people are doing, they don't know the real effect of that work that they're doing. So it's it's a constant journey where you have to tell them whatever you're contributing is contributing to the bigger goal as well, which helps them realizing their part that they're doing. So that way you can make them feel, you know, a bit appreciated as well, that whatever they are doing is for a goal that a leader is following. And it can be a leader, can be a tech lead or like a big CEO, CTO level who has a vision that we are going to just go full in this direction. The hierarchy, the waterfall should flow from the top management, and it should go with clear vision, clear path to everyone below the ladder. That's what I think. Like the vision vision should be very clear, and it should be clearly articulated to the teams as well.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. That's a really good point.
To be honest, nothing to add. Yeah. Here.
I was going to say there was a really good detailed answer to that, and that's definitely answered a few questions, especially in terms of the audit. I always get asked that question: how do I know which route to go down? So it's good to clarify that.
Yeah, a leader has to sometimes take a risk as well. Like, yeah, a lot of leaders take risks. Sometimes they succeed, sometimes they don't. That's why you see a lot of leaders, you know, leavings as well. Because why? With whatever vision they had, it didn't work out for them.
Yeah.
But as a leader, you have to have that courage and, you know, take that path. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of leaders that you've sort of worked with in the past, how did they sort of inspire you in terms of your career?
Oh, yeah, it affects a lot. Like it depends on the person as well, person to person. Some people can be taken aback by bad experiences as well. But I think in my opinion or my personal thinking is take all the good bits from good people, forget about the bad ones. You learn the good parts, and it can be from anyone. Can be from your colleague, can be from your previous manager, or maybe not directly of your team, but you working with some other team and they got a brilliant leader who you think, hey, I want to be this guy. So you learn simple things, even like when I joined as a junior, like 10, 15 years ago, I really like to learn the art of sending an email. Simple thing. Sending an email, being clear and precise in your communication rather than writing a long gibberish email, which has no sense at all. So you have to be very clear, precise. That's a good style of, you know, learning good characteristics from a leader. So I learned a lot from some of my managers in that way. You have to be very precise. Sometimes you have to be diplomatic as well, that you learn. And if needed, you have to be upfront and a bit, heavy-handed as well, if it's required. Yeah. And yeah, so you can take, so even bad experiences teach you a lot. Maybe you were bad in some sense and you didn't perceive that person's vision or whatever. It may not have worked for you, but you may have learned something so that you don't repeat that mistake with your next manager or next leader in general. So you learn, of course, a lot of people have influenced my career, and I've always tried to take good bits and forget about the bad parts.
Yeah, nice. Anton?
Yeah, it's a very, very broad and a good one. I think
You need to start going first.
Yeah.
I've been talking too much.
So I think reflecting on my past, I think I'm more focused right now on what not to do. Yeah. Now, there's so much information, there's so many books, there's so many, I don't know, podcasts out there as well. It's not about, for me, it's not about what to do, because there are so many things to do, right? So I'm now focusing, trimming all the mess, trimming all the noise, and focusing on very basic essentials, right? Qualities which I picked from my past, from other leaders, is being transparent and bringing everyone on a journey. That's an interesting skill, right? And you can bring people in a journey at different levels. For example, mentor your peers, right? You don't have to be like official tech lead, for example, to be a tech lead. That's one of the things I picked from my previous leaders in previous organizations as well. And then be clear and very data-driven. So what I learned hard way is that people really like numbers and be clear, transparent, be on the same page, right? If you can quantify something today or tomorrow and, translate your vision into very quantifiable milestone, today we're doing five things, tomorrow 10 things, that's going to be really, really useful It's my side, my experience.
Yeah. No, I like that because there is a lot of noise and there is a lot of books. And if you go online, you can get overwhelmed by all the things you need to do to be a good leader. So I think it's nice the way that you've sort of reversed engineered that and sort of looked at what you don't want to be doing.
And the idea is to stick with your personality style or whatever suits you the best. Because if you try to imbibe someone else and who you are not, then probably you will end up in a soup. Like, you won't be that person. So whatever characteristics or person you are, it's better to build on top of that rather than be a different person altogether. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but what if your personality and your characteristics were making you not to be as effective in terms of leadership? Would you change certain aspects of yourself?
That's not easy. That's not easy.
Yeah.
It takes time. It takes time, but there are tools by which you can maybe try to learn. I won't say it will happen overnight.
Yeah.
But if you really want to move in that direction, if you have your career path defined that this is what I want to be, then you will be able to convince yourself that I have to work upon me.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Now, there's one of the biggest challenges that I'm facing, when I'm speaking to engineering leaders, it's the same thing that keeps coming up. It's finding the balance of being on the balcony and being on the dance floor.
Yeah.
Now, what would you say to that? And because it might be hard to provide what a balance should look like because it depends on what project you're working on, what's coming up. There's a lot of noise that you've got to cut out as well. How do you know when you are well balanced? The toughest question of the day, and so Vikas is pointing to Anton there.
Yeah, no, I can go.
Great. No, I can take that one. So, basically, what to do when you want to be on a balcony or in the trenches as well. I'm going to put a really biased and experience from myself, right? And I really encourage you to go in the trenches straight away. So you need to be in the trenches. First of all, you need to be very compassionate to what is going on in the trenches or why we're doing things this way, right? You need to figure out the root reasons. And you need to be really, really aware, right? Once you got all those numbers and you really understand the trenches, you can go and make your way all through the ladder up to the balcony. But don't stay too long in the balcony. You still need to go every now and then in the trenches, right? The other way to scale is to grab your tech leads or key engineers and basically scale through tech engineers around you. Yeah, but even when you're in the balcony, you still need to be aware of what's going on in the trenches, right? It boils down to skill set, knowing what you're doing, able to quantify what's going on everywhere. And as Vikas said, lead by example. I am a believer in a lead by example, literally. I never ask certifications, for example, to do certifications for my engineers, which I haven't done myself very rarely. And in the majority of the cases, I know exactly what needs to be done and how. Fully job which my engineers do, right? And I think it's very much overlooked the hands-on kind of leader, not too hands-on, but at least knowing what's going on in the trenches and able to scale trenches, vertically and horizontally. Yeah.
I think that your question was more about how do you switch off yourself after work, yeah? Like, how do you create a balance between when you're on, when you're off?
Oh, I think it's more the balance between overseeing the product, the code reviews, that then this problem over here, and then I need to fix this problem. The tech's not moving as quick as it needs to be.
Okay.
I mean, in terms of the balance from there.
Yeah, again, in that sense, probably you should have confidence in your team.
Yeah.
You know, confidence, I heard an example somewhere, like one guy was playing hockey or something and he was the captain. He could have scored a goal, but he actually just passed on to his teammate and say, you go finish the job. So you need to have some sort of a trust within your team And if you trust your team, and it builds upon time.
Yeah.
When you know yet someone can deliver things and you can bank upon them, then probably you can just leave it to them and say, yeah, you go do the thing. I'll be focusing on something else.
Yeah.
But you need to oversee every now and then just to take updates. But yeah, that's how you can building trust with the team.
And I think with the hockey shot, maybe the leader was trying to help the player who lacked confidence.
Yeah, there are a lot
of
examples.
So I think that's another good, the way you've sort of positioned that, I think that's a good attribute of a leader as well. It's when someone's, because there's not any engineer that's always 100% on top of the form. Everyone's got stuff going on.
Yes.
Some people lack confidence. Some people need more. Some people are up. Some people are down. It's human beings. So I think, do you think that's really important in terms of leadership, where you need to just keep picking people up as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you have to always look for leaders within your team, irrespective of their designations, because you know if someone has a skill, then you can harness that skill, maybe build your shadow, a copy or something. And then when time comes, maybe this will go into the another question, like how do you get roles?
Yeah.
So that sort of thing, how do you make your transition? So
That's
how you make it. Like you have to build people within your team who are not maybe designated leaders, but you think of them as leaders or potential leaders.
Yeah.
And you bank upon them, like you trust them.
Yeah. I really like that point that if you want to, you know, excel on anything, just basically try to teach this craft another person. Well, that's okay. You want to excel in the rock climbing, or any other craft. You need to teach somebody to your level or even to perfect level, right? And the same to Vika's example. I've been really passionate about elevating other engineers to kind of my replacement level potentially. Right. And as a, for example, senior engineer, you need to elevate your peers to your level, right? You always need to look in the people to replace you in a good way. And that's, I think, indirectly going to elevate your career even further.
Mm. And that's the sign of a good leader. Because if you're a bad leader, you'd be quite selfish and you'd be conscious about how good someone could be that could potentially take your role. But because you're a good leader, you want to train someone up to be at the ability to take over your role.
That's correct.
There is leaders out there that are in leadership positions that wouldn't think like that.
Yeah.
They'd be looking over their shoulder thinking, is this person coming for me? Is he going to have my job? So I think that's why obviously a great leader, because that's the way you think is different in terms of your mentality, in my opinion anyway. Now, let's say, Anton, you're a senior engineer, okay? You've had all the experience that you've got now, all right? And you're about to transition into a tech lead role, not team lead, tech lead. You're still going to be on the tools. You're obviously going to be doing a bit more code reviews, getting involved in the actual commercial side of the business. What would you do differently?
In my situation, what would I do differently?
So knowing what you know now, if you were just about to transition, what would you do?
I'm going to go back to a very precise example. I would take a Scrum certification much more early in my career, because for me, based on my experience, and it's only in my opinion, I really regret that I did Scrum Master certification so late in my career, right? And then I had to spend so much time undoing and unlearning things. And I think that was a little bit of my kind of mistake, but then, like, going back to your same question, what would I do differently in a senior engineer role? I would clearly see different slices, right? As I said, with individual contributor role as an individual engineer, right? But you need to distinguish that you now, it's not about you anymore. You are a force multiplier, right? And I not necessarily understood probably that back in the day. So you're a force multiplier. You need to have two sides. The first one is your team. You need to elevate everyone in your team, whether that's technical or non-technical skills, right? You need to bring everybody on the same page in a journey, help with the ways of working, help with the non-technical stuff, help maybe with the skill set, and you need to move your team forward. If you're not moving team forward every day, step by step, you're just wasting your time and the team's time, to be honest, right? But then from the other perspective, you work now at a different scale within the organization, and you need to pick your battles. You need to understand what's important for organization. LinkedIn, for example, and I'm giving an example, LinkedIn or CodeSmiles probably not as important. Yeah, they're important in the team, but they're not as important in the broader sense across organization. There are maybe much bigger battles to solve for much bigger problems. So key takeaway for me here, find the biggest three big problems in the organizations, and they're probably going to be ugly because no one solved, because no one thinks they are really nice to solve, because they are terrible, ugly, maybe legacy tech stack, maybe on premises, maybe. That's where your attention needs to be. Talk to your manager, talk to your leader, talk to your CTO, grab a coffee, and just ask this one, what are the most challenging problems right now I can solve for you? What is it what's going to make your life easy? What is it what's going to make our company more successful? So two things, yeah? The company problems, and they're not really nice. They're not latest, the greatest tech. And then your team. Keep moving forward in both directions.
Perfect. Great answer. Gus?
Yeah. What I could do differently is probably in early stage of my career, I should have realized I was focusing more on growing in technically more. I knew I was a good team player back then as well, like when I started. But I should have, because I couldn't make up my own mind what exactly I wanted. Should I grow in one direction? Should I go in leadership? Because once you got two paths, yeah? Once you get one, you can go individual contributor. That can be like you live in your silo and no one would care. One could be, other could be like go in a leadership role. Leadership role can be a bit daunting because you have to talk to people and, you know, do sort of people management as well, which can be. So maybe early in my career, I didn't took the right amount of ownership or like initiative from my side that I want to move into this direction. Once I, like a few years back, I was a tech lead, principal engineer sort of a role where I was doing the same thing. But I there were personal circumstances because of which I have to get into my foot in the door of Australian market because I was coming from offshore. Yeah. So things were different for me. So I have to take whatever role comes my way, still have to prove it. I was not a dedicated tech lead or whatever. So I lost some time over there. Probably I should have shown more intent, taken more initiatives there, proved up to my management that, hey, I can be the next, you know, whatever leader, tech lead, whatever. I missed out that part. But yeah, I'm making up for that now.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. I think that's really good inputs in terms of helping people make the transition. And probably lastly then, why would you not make the transition?
I'll take this question first. Anton always, like, this is a view from Anton as well. And I also realized it very recently that being in leadership is sort of a very lonely place because as an engineer, you have a lot of people to talk to. But when you get into like leadership roles, your scope of people or peers shrink. And there is a bit of constant, you know, sort of a competition as well that who wants to go up the ladder first. That's human nature, yeah. So yeah, it's a bit of a lonely place. Also, not for people who doesn't like to talk to people. You know, people management is tough. Technology is easy. You can deal with it. Yeah, you can learn something for like, say, 6 months and you can start doing something. But being with people is a skill which cannot be for everyone. Someone said, hey, I want to live in my own bubble and do my coding. And that's it. That's my life. Be it if it's good for you. But if you want to be into leadership role, you have to be diplomatic. You have to talk to people. You need to bring people on board and let them talk rather than you directing things. Take vision from them, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. And so?
I can't agree more with Vikas on the mental toil of being alone and Yeah, I want to talk about, I guess, this one, Unpack Further. That's absolutely ridiculously lonely place. To be honest, as any craft which you perform in and excel in, the more you do and the more you excel in, it's going to become the lonelier. The funnel just goes to absolutely zero, right? The top performers in any sport, it's like elite, elite club, yeah? There's some less people and there's less people to talk to. And the same here. And the mental toll is massive. It's crushing, basically because you've got no one to talk to, validate your ideas, right? And, check, double check, have a brainstorming, I guess, and then adds up with imposter syndrome. There's that famous video by Atlassian on imposter syndrome. You just, am I doing right? Yeah. And unconsciously, your brain just goes into this vicious circle, which can basically just destroy you. I think that's my personal kind of intention.
It takes a toll on you. Yeah. So
even a tech lead, right? I've got 3 teams right now nowadays, and I'm really kind of, I guess, grateful that we've got 2 teams and 2 tech leads, and Vikas is not alone, actually.
Yeah.
Not only Vikas talks to me and we brainstorm a lot of things, but with a 2nd tech lead, right? And that eliminates that emotional toil. But even Vikas feels that one, right? And it just potentially grows because the margin of error is, and the blast radius is massive, right? Depending where you are, what you're doing, right? The blast radius of your decisions is massive, right? But then another thing is that time gonna slow down significantly because like you're working as a senior engineer, you're moving work, you're making progress every day, you're enjoying that feeling of movement, right? Scrum boards, doing work, everybody's doing work. It's amazing feeling. It just pumps me up every morning, right? The more you progress, I think, in a leadership career, time gonna slow down, and everything that you're trying to solve is gonna take like 6 months, mm-hmm. right? Maybe not technically, but because you need to align people, you need to align budgets, you need to align skill set, you need to foster skill set in your engineering team. You know how to solve problems, but right now, you don't have engineers who know that particular tech stack, that particular piece of technology, right? And you know that you need to spend 6 months, right? You're waking up every day counting those days because, you know, 6 months are ahead. You kind of frustrated, impatient, alone, and the time just slows down. And that's very crushing, I think, right, personally. So be ready for those things. Yeah, depending where you are, time going to slow down.
Yeah, adding to that, it's the same thing. The rewards slow down because as an engineer, you fix a problem, you fix a code, instant reward you get.
Instant,
hey, I fixed this. Mm. But as a leader, it takes time. Every problem you solve, probably it's a 6 month problem or a 7 month problem. And the reward, instant gratification is not there.
Yeah.
So you miss that thing sometimes.
Yeah. And that could be like a bit of adrenaline as well that you miss.
Yes.
It's like scoring a goal.
Yes.
And then or getting a wicket.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Or hitting a...
You're like a coach. You can't do much because your team is playing.
Yeah.
You're just sitting and thinking, hey, do this, do that.
But then when it does work well, that's when you can celebrate.
Oh, yeah.
You get your big
avalanche.
Big
push. Yeah. it just constant ocean of adrenaline, right? And you're just like, I told you so.
Yeah.
I told you so 6 months ago. Yeah, and your vision just unfolding, and then there's that moment of kind of, not a fame, right, but you're just feeling so good. Because over that, you know, 6 or 8 months or whatever your timeline was, you was like step by step getting to that tip of the mountain, and everybody was like, nah, you're not going to get there. And you're just like, hold on, like step by step. And then you're finally on the top, and everybody just like, yeah, that's easy. You know, you've been born this way. No, I put like 6 months of hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting. And on that, is there much around Sydney in terms of meetups and networking to be speaking with other leaders in your position? Because you mentioned then that it would be good to bounce ideas off. Not only that, sometimes it's just to get a bit of confidence in what you're doing. Someone might have gone through a similar project. Someone might have delivered a certain, you know, product that you're working on. Do you think that would help? Or again, is it finding the time to do that?
Well, I think IT community in Melbourne, Sydney, and just whole Australia is so interconnected and so small that indirectly we just talk to each other at different levels. Yeah, it might not be public, or but it still happens.
All right. Last question. I know we're sort of going over time, but bear with me on this one because it was it's an interesting point. What's your opinion on leaders seem to get paid a lot more than really good engineers? However, some really good engineers can have the same impact, if not better, to a business in terms of commercial. For example, at Google, the engineers that are building the SEO, et cetera, they're on so much money, but then you've got leaders that are at Google that might not be on as much, but it doesn't really happen across other businesses. Do you feel like that should change, or do you feel like leaders deserve to earn more money?
Oh, that's a tricky one. That's a tricky one. I think the risk factor that leaders own is too much for a company. So I think they still be compensated more because they got a big things at stake. But having said that, if someone is really, really adding value to your business and he's like a star or whatever, like as a software engineer, I think it's better to compensate him as well because he's adding value to it. But in general, I would believe like still leaders will be paid more because for of course reason, like they have a vision and the risk factor is too much because their own career is also at stake in taking decisions. So they should be compensated well as well.
Okay. Hands on.
Yeah, that's a good point because can't disagree with that. Margin of error is too high or too small, depending on where you are, what you're doing. I think it depends also on organization, maturity as well. Are we talking about tech organization, which is Google, or are we talking about government organization, for example, right? Even within the government, right, you've got different jobs, different roles, and more importantly, responsibilities and impact as well. Yeah, what government does, at which scale, and things like that. And then you've got maybe non-technology businesses. And we need to understand the context. Technology or non-technology businesses, there is a different mechanic inside the company where are different problems to solve and the risk factor as well, different. Like big banks, for example, right? Big banks, security factor is a big one. And then we're talking about small 5-people startup, very different situation. So I think it's very difficult to come up with like one single answer here. We need to focus on context.
Yeah. Depends on the organization, of the scale, of the type.
Someone brought it up to me the other day, and I thought it was an interesting point that I've not really thought about because you're just used to knowing that leaders
are paid high.
But then, so I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. Well, fellas, that brings the show to an end. It's been a great conversation. I've actually enjoyed having two on the show. More people, the better. Thank you so much for your inputs in terms of your experience and the feedback as well. There'll definitely be some engineers listening that you're going to be helping the community, so appreciate that, and thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Sam, really appreciate that.
No problem.
You've been listening to Decoding Careers with Sam Yates. This podcast is proudly brought to you with the support of recruitment agency Discovered People. To find out more, go to discoveredpeople.com.au.